Hey, it's episode 25. And I'm talking to Mr. Ben Wiggins, who was my guest on all the way back in episode 2. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Matthew. It's a pleasure and an honour to be on for a second time. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. It's taken me nearly 2 years to do 25 podcasts. It's quality, not quantity, that counts.
Absolutely. Some of the guests that you've had recently have definitely been quality.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the one I did with Richard Ellis and with Stuart Buckland.
Absolutely.
They do an excellent podcast.
Oh, they do. They do. They do. Those trousered gentlemen were most excellent. I'd also like to... I'd like to thank...
This season's become very cross-promotional.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to thank... I'd also like to thank Richard for the small shout-out that he gave me during his episode in relation to a particular movie and a particular scene. Yeah.
Yes.
That made me... That gave me a good
Comedy
laugh.
Company.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, there was that as well.
We're talking tonight about your songs... Your 6 songs.
Indeed.
And several of them, well, 2 in particular were of no surprise whatsoever. We'll get to that.
I was just going to say, these songs were, basically I chose these songs because they were songs that, they had stories to them. Like they actually had... They had meaning and at a particular point in time, and it was actually pretty easy. Like I thought it was going to be this is going to be really difficult, and it's going to take me ages. And I've really got to be very, this is very important. And it actually came quite easily. So I'm really looking forward to this. Actually,
I think that's a good point. I think a lot of people get caught in their heads that this is very important. If I choose the wrong one, someone's going to come and knock on my door saying, you chose the wrong song.
We're going to get some very, very boldly written emails. Maybe some in italics.
I have got not one piece of electronic feedback on any of these podcasts I've done. This is my 25th. So as far as I know, me and Nick... and a few other people are the only ones who listen to all of them. All right, but what I wanted to get into is, for you, Wigo, and indeed your family, music is a very big deal.
Yeah, it always has been. I mean, we have some very, very musical, professional musical people in our family. Starting from my eldest cousin, who is a professional guitarist, and yes. not a session musician. He is he does Spanish classical guitar, and teaches that, and is absolutely phenomenal. Currently touring around Australia, or has been touring around Australia. Played at the Opera House. Amazing, just phenomenal. And there's my cousin Joe, who's part of this, who'll be part of one of the stories, one of the songs, basically was in a band. I was in a few bands, but was in a band in Japan that was just one of the craziest things I've ever seen live. But just so...
Saw him live?
Yeah, saw him live in Sydney at a warehouse. Of all places, with my mother. Now,
oh, wow,
and it was just bizarre. It was amazing. Like the Japanese techno dance thing. I don't even know how to describe it, but it was amazing.
What was it called? Can you remember?
Triple Nipples. Sorry, that was the name of the band, not the name of the concert.
That is awesome. That wasn't a setup. I had no idea. That was called Triple Nipples. How did Helen find it? Did she like it?
It was probably a bit of a culture shock, because they had some Australian fans that were really, really into it. They would get like full body painted with tape around their, like, so there were, I think there were two lead singers, the girls, then Joe was doing mixing at the back, and they had a live drummer, and they would be fucking decked out in head to toe, you know, costume and face paint, and it was just, it was very in your face and very, and amazing, like all original songs, and just phenomenal. Mum loved it. She loves that. You know, she's very eclectic in regards to her taste in music.
I mean, I was that's my original point, was I love just going over to your house when we were in year 9 and hearing, what's your mum listening to today?
Yeah. Oh, the Andrew Sisters?
Did she listen to a bit of Cream? Or was she listening to a bit of the Andrew Sisters? Yeah, that was, I'd never heard of the, well, maybe I'd seen the Andrews Sisters on like Abbott and Costello movies, yep, from like the 40s, but I never heard or knew people who enjoyed listening to Rum and Coca-Cola. And yeah.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Yeah.
Oh, what a sad song. I mean, Chattanooga Choo Choo. I mean, that was, and the Boogie Woogie.
Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. I love that song. Yeah, that's a really Boogie. Good song.
Yeah,
that's,
it's
amazing.
A great song. Yeah, some good scatting in there as well.
And also, like, Christmas sing alongs. So we'd have.
Oh, yes.
Like, we had you and Rich and Stu over for, was it 2 Christmases in a row?
Yeah, there were 2 Christmases in a row around the early 2000s, I think, where that was a Christmas tradition where I would have Christmas Day with my family, or we'd all have Christmas Day with our families, and then we'd all go over to your house with all your family and have a good old sing-along party with your mum and her sisters dancing and singing. And that was, and then we'd go out to someone else's house afterwards. That was they were good Christmases.
Oh, it's crazy times. Like, that was, and we had a mini one of those 2 years ago, I think it was. Was just impromptu, just hadn't happened for a long time, and then impromptu had like an hour and a half of singing, just sitting on mum's back deck at Christmas. It was really it was really good.
Yeah, they do love a good song in the Wiggins Clown, but we got to crack on. We haven't even got to your first song, which is "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," obviously by the Beatles.
Yes.
And you've just simply written that this is your favourite.
This is my favourite song. Of all the songs that I've listened to, this is my favourite song. And it's, I think it's a lot to do with the story, like the intertwining stories between George Harrison and Eric Clapton.
Did like you say that, intertwining story?
I did say. And so.
Okay, sorry,
yeah. I did. My introduction to the Beatles was through Terry, who we spoke about in podcast number 2, who also introduced me to a lot of movies. Now, he had the White Album. And so I would sit in the lounge room and listen to the first side of the White Album. And I would listen to that constantly. I didn't really listen to Disc 2 very much, but
okay.
I did listen to the first disc constantly, and Rocky Raccoon and While My Guitar Gently Weeps were the 2 songs that I just loved. I just listened to those constantly.
So how old were you when this was going on?
Oh, it would have been probably 13 or 14, maybe a little bit younger.
See, how is it possible that I've known you all these years? I got into this album probably when I was 16.
Yeah.
How did we not ever talk about it at school? If I knew that you liked that much, that would have been most of our conversations for the next 10 years, I reckon. That's insane.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if there... I didn't realise. I didn't really talk about it. I didn't talk about music that much in like when I was younger, because
That's not true, Wiggins.
Well,
I do remember us sitting in the playground singing Boys to Men songs.
That is true.
So maybe that's the classic teenage thing where you only ever talk about music that's popular now.
Yep.
Because if you start talking about anything different, then you might just be the only one talking about it.
Exactly. So I would listen to that, and there was a lot of stuff that, like, you know, that very eclectic stuff that would get played in the house.
Yeah.
That I just thought no one else is going to listen to this. Like, no one else will even know what I am talking about. Like, obviously it was the Beatles, but I didn't know that anyone else listened to the Beatles. I just thought it was an old person stuff that I really enjoyed. And
yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, when we lived together, that's pretty much all that got played was you had the bread box.
Yeah, I got that for my 21st.
Yeah, so what Beatles album will we listen to today? And that's when I started to really, like, I would say Revolver would be my favourite Beatles album, but While My Guitar Gently Weeps is my favourite song, and I used to use it as a demo at work. So I would actually, I had it ripped on a CD, and if someone wanted to listen to something, it probably wasn't the greatest demo song, but I just really like listening to it, so I would
I think it's awesome. I mean, someone sent me a link on Facebook last week, and it was someone playing a stick guitar. You know what a stick guitar is? And they're playing this song on a stick guitar. And I reckon I got about 20 seconds into it before I went and found the original and listened to the original instead. Just to hear Clapton on the guitar.
Oh. That.
The solos in it are great.
And uncredited. Like, he just said, I was reading some stuff and he said he played it. And then he listened back to it, and he said it's not Beatles-y enough. So they had to go back and do some, I don't know, do some producing shit to it, so till he was happy that it was Beatles-y enough. But
Jesus,
and like just the whole Clapton, George Harrison, and Harrison's wife that then turned into Clapton's wife, and yet they're still best friends and. You know,
yeah, and he was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's fine, no worries. Can you come play guitar on this song for me, please?
Yeah.
I like that sort of underlying backstory behind something like that. But the song itself is just, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. It's a song that I can sit there with my headphones on, with my eyes closed, and I'd have it on repeat because it's just freaking amazing.
I love, there's a version of it on the third anthology CD with
different lyrics.
It has much darker lyrics. Well, it has one darker lyrics, which I wrote down because I wanted to get it right. Which was, I look from the wings at all the plays you are staging, and I'm sitting here doing nothing but aging.
Mm.
Like, whew.
That's pretty hardcore.
It's a bit sadder than the rest of the song, even though it's about his guitar gently weeping. But I was like, yeah, that's much darker.
I was fiddling through YouTube trying to find something to play it for Lynn's, my wife, and I came across the Concert for George.
Yeah.
When McCartney's playing on the piano and Clapton does the vocals as well.
Yeah.
And it's obviously live, and it's awesome. Like, it's really, really good. Like, it's obviously not the original, but I like Clapton as a vocalist, even though he's fairly limited in his range. But
yeah,
that version, I was very, very happy with that version as well. But
there is a crazier version, which you need to check out, which is Tom Petty, Steve Winwood,
yep,
Jeff Lynne, and Prince.
Okay.
And Prince just gets out his guitar solo and just goes a bit crazy on that. It's fantastic. But what I wanted to get
Prince
talk about,
yes,
because as you know from living with me, is I'm a huge Beatles fan.
Yes.
And this is going to seem completely off topic, but I heard, and maybe you recommended it to me, was the Greg Proops podcast, The Smartest Man in the World podcast. Smartest Man in the World,
yep.
He did this almost like eulogy for Adam Yauch, you know, MCA from the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
And in it, he talked about how rare it is that people who get into the music industry, the rock stars, that kind of thing, how rare it was for someone to start off in the place that they were and actually evolve into better humans as their careers moved on.
Yeah.
Usually they get overwhelmed by money and success, yeah, and it's very rare, or they just stay the same and they seem to be the same people. But what I got from that is, you look at George Harrison's life, and he went from starting in the Beatles, and the songs he wrote in the Beatles those first few years of recording,
yeah,
are pretty, I guess, bland, and a lot of times they just put a couple of George songs on the album to just keep him happy.
As they ended up doing with Ringo in the end. So
yeah. Yeah, there's some songs on the White Album that aren't necessary, but anyway. But then as it progressed, he was writing just better songs. He was just going from songs about... did he just write covers? Or did he just do... They gave him throwaway songs like, I Want to Be Your Lover, Baby, I Want to Be Your Man. And then, yeah, he's writing While My Guitar Gently Weeps. He's writing With Him, Without You, which freaked me out as a teenager listening to that. And then he writes Something and Because, all these beautiful songs. Here Comes the Sun on their last album. And you're like, holy crap, he just progressed. And like I said before, this is my wife. you want her? Okay.
That's cool.
That's the universe telling me that's, you know, they went and did Indian mysticism, and he was the only one that was like, I get it.
Yeah.
What's everyone's problem?
Let's just be cool. He just seemed like the guy that was just like, you know what, let's just be cool.
Yeah, and then I'm going to, like, produce The Life of Brian. I'm just going to...
And he loves cricket. We love cricket. He loves cricket. I'm sure he still loves cricket.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about George.
If not just that song, everything else about him was pretty fucking special as well.
Yeah, that's right. I really rate him as a guitarist too, when you listen, especially on Revolver. If you listen to his guitar on Revolver, you're like, holy shit, he could shred when he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Just quality.
We've got to move on. Enough about George. Oh dear. Your next song, which is Karma Police by the radio, by the Radiohead.
The Radiohead.
Why I called them the Radiohead. What's all that about? You wrote here that it was all about England. Tell us more about England, Reed.
So in 98, I went to England for a few months, and I was only there for, I think it was 5 months in total, but I was pretty much there by myself. I was there, like my mum was there and my sister were there, but they were doing other things at that time. So I was there pretty much doing it on my own and spent a week in England. Sorry, in England, fucking in London. The
So you were living in Leeds or in York?
Living in York, or just outside of York in Greenhamerton, and was, you know, I was 20-minute drive away from the centre of York, and I was playing cricket on the weekends and one day during the week, but then the other days just sort of twiddling my thumbs. So I was getting a bit, you know, getting a bit antsy, getting a bit homesick, needed to find some, you know, needed something different. So I went down to London and stayed for a couple of nights with some friends of mine. And we would, you know, we'd be up all night drinking and carrying on. But the first morning that I woke up there, I went for a wander and ended up going into a record store. And I bought OK Computer on CD. And I went home that night and I listened to it until the batteries went dead on my Walkman, on my Discman. And Karma Police was like, it was late. It was probably midnight, and I put it on, and that came on. And I hadn't heard the whole album before, and was just like, it was this whole build up of this particular album, and oh my god, this is going to be fucking amazing. And I put it on, and it was everything that I expected it to be. Even on the first listen, like, you know how sometimes you listen to an album, you're like, I've got to listen to that 3 or 4 times before I really get it.
Yeah, a lot of Radiohead albums certainly have that,
mm.
especially later ones, where you're like, that's unusual, yes. that's a bit different. And then the third listen, you're like, ah, oh, cool.
Ah, right. But the song that really jumped out at me, especially at that stage, was Karma Police. And then, and again, it's another song that every time I hear it, it's never a song that I would skip. It's never a song that I'd be like, oh, no, I've already heard that. It's one of those things. Like when you see a movie come on in the, and you just go, well, I've just got to watch the rest of this. And so I've got to listen to the rest of this. I can't not listen to this because it's great. It holds, you know, it holds great memories.
It's a music equivalent. It's a music equivalent of watch it when Flying High comes on.
That's right.
Or Caddyshack.
Yeah, exactly.
Caddyshack's on TV and it's on now, I'm watching it.
That's right. And then I saw the film clip and just went, yeah, all right, cool. I don't know. these guys are crazy.
Yeah.
But that experience and the feeling of, I don't know how they combine, but I just remember feeling better. I don't know. Yeah. I felt better after hearing that album and listening to that song, and just kind of felt better about the whole situation where I was, and that I'd, you know, something that I'd heard maybe before someone else, or had a feeling of being in on the ground floor with something like that, because it had only just been released. And yeah, but Karma Police just stood out for me. And then coming home and listening to the band, to the bands.
Yeah.
After I'd listened to OK Computer, but nothing that I'd listened to from Radiohead had sort of jumped out at me as much as Karma Police had. It was just, yeah, it was a great time to hear that, and it's stuck with me ever since.
Do you listen to that album much, like in its entirety anymore?
No, I should, because it's fucking amazing. It would be in my top 10 albums.
Yeah, it would certainly. I mean, it's interesting, the first two songs that you've chosen, that number one would be my number one album, and this one's probably from my number two album, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was the same. I remember I got it, again, off my music dealer, who was a friend of ours too, which was Snatchy,
yes.
Confectionery King. He used to come and visit us and eat bags and bags of lollies. And but he came over and he said, "Oh, I've just bought this. It's new." And then he said, "Oh, I'll be back next weekend," as he always was.
Mm.
So he left it with me for a week, and then I had to give it back and had to go and buy my own copy. But I think I might have listened to that every day for at least a month, maybe 6 weeks, every day.
So good.
I think the first, if I had that on vinyl, I think the first side of that album is the best side of an album ever, without a doubt. Those first six songs are just crazy, crazy good.
Yeah, and just so...
Yeah, and...
Yeah, like, never... Because I hadn't... I don't know, I think I'd heard Paranoid Android.
Yeah.
Like, they'd released... I think that was the single, yeah? That was the single from that album.
Yeah.
So we'd heard
that.
Which
is so weird.
I know.
It's an odd song. The film clip...
It's fucking crazy.
If you haven't seen the film clip, The Paranoid Android, just watch it. I nearly... this is how stupid I am and how much I love Radiohead. I nearly showed that film clip in class at school, because we were doing Romeo and Juliet, and I played them talk show host, which was meant to be the final song in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
It is in Romeo and Juliet. So I played them that, and then they were like, "Oh, that song's..." One girl say, she said, "That song's really sad, but it also is uplifting." Yeah, that's pretty much Radiohead. So then I showed them maybe Karma Police, and then I started showing them Paranoid Android, and I was like, click. I just remembered what happens in this film clip, so I'm not going to show you the rest of this.
You can go ahead and source
see it,
that.
If you want to watch it, go and see it yourself. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh. But so when you're in England, so you're only there 5 months. So what did you do travel-wise?
I went to... Where did I go? Well, I got there and then went, well, what the fuck do I do now? So I went and played cricket, and was playing cricket three days a week, as I said, and that was pretty much all I did. Then I got a phone call from Grant, a friend of mine who was a marathon swimmer. He was coming over.
Former world champion, former marathon swimmer.
Exactly. Also had been on Hey Hey It's Saturday.
There's a lot of people confused with which podcast they're listening to right at the moment. But it's true, right? He was on Hey Hey It's Saturday for what reason? Did they sponsor him or something?
No, he was on Hey Hey because he had just finished the 24-hour... He had just broken the world record for 24 hours swimming. So distance swum in a 50-meter pool over 24 hours.
It's insane.
Absolutely. And he had also won a world championship gold medal for marathon swimming as well.
Yeah.
So, marathon swimming is a fucking big thing through Europe. So,
oh, really? I remember you. I knew that you joined him in that when he was doing it, but I didn't realize it was so huge.
So it was like I didn't realize it was so huge either. But he rang me, and he said, "Do you want to come and be my handler through Europe for what was it? I think it was 3 weeks. There were three races that were on, and so I just up and went through. You know, we went to Rome and we went to Croatia and we went to Macedonia, and I had I'd done nothing. I'd done no travel at all in England until a friend from Australia came over and went, "Come on, we're going traveling in England. We're going traveling in Europe." Because
that's pretty much what happened to me.
I had no money. He said, "Look, I'll pay for all your flights and everything."
I was going to say, what does being a handler to a marathon swimmer involve? Or was he just like, "I want to hang out with Wigo"?
Oh, there was a bit of that. Because we were really close. And he just said, "Look, I'd really like you to come." In the end, so being a handler is basically you're either in a canoe or a boat, a small tinny, next to the swimmer. So they're swimming, and then you've just got a whole stack of shit for them to eat and drink during that time. And you give them splits, you let them know where they are in the pack, you let them know basically what's going on around them, because obviously they're just head down, bum up, swimming.
So how far are they swimming?
anywhere from sort of 12K, 20K, I can't specifically remember how far those races were, but Macedonia was amazing. Macedonia, there's this massive lake, right, in where Macedonia is, and then across the lake is their fucking sworn enemy. And there was civil unrest in the country at that particular time.
So this is 98, isn't it?
Yeah, this was 98. And we had the UN driving tanks outside the hotel, and it was crazy. That was beautiful. This lake was absolutely pristine. It was just gorgeous, but it was a battleground.
That is crazy.
It was phenomenal.
And then the swimming came to town.
And then the swimming came to town, and there were fucking people everywhere. And it was, it was really, a really nice little sort of, it was outside of Macedonia, but the main capital city. But there was this beautiful little, we went and had dinner two nights down in the town centre. And it was just, there were thousands of people there just for the swimming. It was bizarre. I never understood how it became so big, but I suppose it's it's just one of those things. They love it. And there was the night before we left, we found out that there was a casino in the hotel about 2 km up the road, or maybe 3 km up the road. So we snuck out. Our bus was going at 4 o'clock in the morning to get us on a flight to get to Rome for the next race or whatever it was. And we went up there at 10, and actually we'd already packed our bags. Everything was packed. We were dressed, and we ran down the road at 3:45 in the morning to basically run in, run up the stairs, grab our bags and run back down blind, because free drinks if you're playing.
If you're gambling.
If you're gambling. Always. But, so Grant hadn't gone real well in that race. But
did you do well at the casino?
No, I think we came out even. But that was fine. That's pretty good.
That's winning.
That's a win if you're blind.
That's winning at the casino. Now, is it like one of those things, because you were 19, 20, that you, at the time you were just this is heaps of fun, but when you look back at it, you're like, holy crap, that was pretty amazing opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, I think back to that, that was one of the most amazing things that had ever happened to me as a, and it gets lost on you a little bit as a, you're right, as a 19 or 20 year old, Like,
you're hanging out with your friend in another country.
Hanging out with it. Like, there was a couple of mates there. Like, I had worked at the pool where all these guys had swum. So the team had pretty much come out of this pool, and I got to just tag along. So it was just like being, you know, I was fucking nothing, you know. Like, I was literally a hanger-onerer. But in Croatia, after the race, Grant finished second, I think. So we had to go up on the podium. I got to carry the flag. Like, they had the Australian flag marched in for the ceremony. I got to carry the flag. They just kind of walked around and said, "Who wants to carry the flag?" I said, "I will carry that flag." And I got to carry the Australian flag into a medal ceremony. It was...
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it was mental. Got to stand up just on the podium. Just because I was there.
Just because you're bumming around England, just doing not a lot. And someone said, "Come and hang out with us."
Exactly.
That's cool.
Oh,
man, that's awesome. Well, we've got to crack on to number three, which is, again, another band that you introduced me to. I think my brother may have listened to Mr. Bungle from time to time, but you were the one who were like, "Hey, listen to this," when maybe we were 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And it frightened me.
Yeah, it frightened me as well, this is where my family come into it, in that we went on a family trip down to visit my auntie Lib and my cousin Joe and my cousin Annie. Now, Joe had been in a couple of bands and was just, you know, he was a muso, you know, smoking a bit of weed. He was the guy that, he was the cool older cousin that I was going to say,
he is one of the coolest people I've ever met in my entire life, without a doubt.
And still is. You know, like, he's 40 there's something.
No pretentiousness about him. He's just a dude. But you can just, I don't know, there's something just super smooth about everything he ever does, says.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And so here's me, fucking lanky, like 14-year-old, knows nothing about music. I'd listened to music, but I didn't know anything about music, if that makes any sense. I'm sure it does.
I know exactly what you mean.
So I had no taste. Absolutely no. I had no opinions on music. I just knew what it was. So here I go, walking into my cousin's bedroom. He has, like, he plays guitar. He's in bands. He's writing his own music. He's got CDs, blue-tacked, all over his walls in his bedroom, right? So the CD case was blue-tacked to the wall, and you just go up and open it up and pull the CD out. It was, like, these were amazing times. This guy is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he said, "Listen to this." And he gave me a copy of Mr. Bungle's self-titled album, Mr. Bungle.
Yeah.
And I probably listened to that for 6 weeks straight. Because I'd never heard anything like it. It was another thing where I'd gotten in at the ground floor. Well, I felt that I'd gotten in at the ground floor, because I could take that back to school and go, "None of you fuckers know what this is. This is new. This is crazy. You have to listen to this." And girls
and are even porn. If you listen to it, I still might not know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And so, but Girls of Porn was like, it just made me laugh. It made me laugh, and it just appealed to my sense of humour, and some of the lines in it are just amazing, and the shifts in tone of the music are phenomenal. And it like that, it's crazy. It is just crazy.
Yeah,
but I loved it.
I still have a very, very clear memory of you. I'm guessing it was this album, but you're like, here, listen to this at your house, and just being like, I don't know, this is weird. this is making me uncomfortable and itchy for some reason. I didn't know for years that it was Mike Patton?
Yeah, exactly. From Faith No More.
Faith No More. I had no idea. For years and years and years after that. But I mean, I use Mr. Bungle songs to freak out teenagers still.
Yeah.
I do this task with students where I get them to close their eyes and I play music and then they write down what appears in their imagination.
Yeah.
So I start off with like Beethoven and like, you know, simple stuff.
Yeah.
And then I play them Goodbye Sober Day and just break their brains. Because that has like Buddhist nasal singing in the middle of it, this chanting, this crazy Buddhist chanting in the middle of a song, and then goes really hardcore, and then it just goes bling 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 bling, completely freaks them out. Like that's like a nightmare. Yeah, you know, it's
pretty much. Dream.
That's how most of them describe it.
Yeah, I was telling Linz about it tonight before we started doing this, and I said, look, these guys, basically, they just sort of, they really like clowns, and they sort of like to dress up as clowns, and she said, no, I'm out. I don't ever want to listen to any of it. I'm just, clowns. Yeah, I don't.
Carousel's another great song, isn't it?
Oh.
Carousel's a freaking great song. So all of these things, like you said, you got your taste at what age do you reckon? Like 13, 14?
I reckon 13, 14, I got introduced to this, maybe, yeah, probably 13, 14. Then I found the tape again when I was probably 16, 17. So I'd listened to it, and then took... I remember just taking it into legal studies one day.
Yeah.
And just going around to people at their desks while the particular teacher on duty wasn't in the classroom. He's going, listen to this. Go on, listen to this. Still doing it. Like isn't 3 years later, just go, you just got to listen to this.
Imagine putting that on your work as your little demo system.
We've got it on vinyl. We've got that album on vinyl at work, and I walk past it and with a just sort of give it a knowing nod every time I walk past it.
Just give it a little touch as you walk past.
So good.
Because I don't reckon I got taste, musical taste until I moved out of home. Like that's how crappy...
Yeah.
How little taste I had. I don't reckon I got it until people like Snatchy were like, here, listen to this OK Computer.
Yep.
Here's Girling.
Yep.
Like, what the hell is this? This is, and all the stuff you're talking about.
Here's the Porkers.
13, 14. Yeah, here's the Porkers. Here's Skank and Pickle. Here's God knows who else. But even like here's Dizzy Gillespie. Here's Coltrane. Here's, you know, Kind of Blue, all that stuff as well. So the people I moved out with and people who you consequently live with, they just had all this just so discordant taste in music that just fitted so beautifully. But that was really what happened. And then one of the guys moved out and you moved in. And the next songs that we're going to talk about were the only songs that I heard for about 8 months. and you put, we had to put these together just for the right thing, which are Powderfinger's My Happiness and Ben Lee's Cigarettes Will Kill You.
Dun, 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 dun. So that start of a song nearly got that me killed.
Yeah, it's stuck in my brain. And if you ask Jess Ripper, I'm guaranteeing you he doesn't need to listen to that song
again.
To that song.
Oh.
No.
So while I was gathering my taste for music in a house full of guys that loved that, there was very eclectic blend of music in that house. I had a carton full of vinyl and a record player that had like, what did it have, like part, like there was some funk albums in there, and then
that we got from just, your mum.
Yeah, like there was.
Yeah, I remember. Listen, we listened to it had Bob Dylan's Desire, which was awesome. But it had like Grand Funk Railroad. Yeah. I remember,
and
that was always a late night to put that on.
They have Billy Joel, like Best of Billy Joel, the double album, yeah. Best of Billy Joel, and I would fucking play that to death. I think there was some Elton John in there as well.
Yeah, it was a whole odd, very 70s.
Mm.
It had a Bob Marley album, but I can't remember which one. It wasn't a best of, which was great because there was all these songs in there that I'd never heard. But its first song was Easy Skankin'. I remember that because I was like, holy shit, what's this song? This song's awesome.
But then, like, we listened to that Ben Lee album quite a lot, but then when it was all, every time it was my turn to put music on in the house, I would put that fucking album on. And then I'd repeat the first song again. And it would just happen constantly. And I would get these songs in my brain and I just want to listen to them. It was like a fucking addiction. And exactly the same thing happened. Well, the next album on the list was Odyssey Number 5. That came out. My Happiness was on there. And that took the place of Cigarettes Will Kill You. So that sort of melded into that. And then when we were playing Driver in the lounge room
on the PlayStation,
I would put on Odyssey Number 5 and we would sit down for 3 hours and then we'd listen to a couple of Beatles albums and then I'd put Odyssey Number 5 back on.
I mean, maybe it's a testament to how much Powderfinger's Odyssey Number 5 is better than Ben Lee's album, which I can't even recall what it is.
Yeah.
But I can still listen to it.
Breathing Odyssey Tornadoes. Breathing Tornadoes is the name of that album.
There you go. Yes.
I haven't listened to that album since.
I can still listen. Why need to? It's all in your brain.
That's right.
Hard work. I don't know why. Maybe it's just that refrain is so repetitive.
Mm.
And if you wanted to torture someone, you could literally just put that on a loop and drive them insane with it.
Yes. So.
And it's.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, Odyssey Number 5 is an amazing album, and My Happiness is an awesome song. And I listened to that with Sal a lot at work. And that sort of, I really enjoyed that song, and I'd like to take Cigarettes Will Kill You off that list because it's not really. But I can't.
If it wasn't on this list, I would have been talking about it anyway.
But look, My Happiness is that's always intertwined in the in living at Denison and that experience and just all the music that was involved there. But that song. Well, those two songs stand out for their repetition and my fucking constant
obsession. The other one that got played to death, I remember a girlfriend at the time complaining about just how often she had to listen to Everything in Its Right Place from Kid A.
Yep.
That was another one. Which was like, oh my God, how many times do you boys have to play that song? It's just flavour of the week, sorry. Right. It's just what happens in this house. But you talked before about how Joe was like giving you all this musical taste. And this is what I mean about when we live together, because you were the person who brought Talking Heads into our house and put it on and put it on and put it on until we all loved it. Like, hey, shut up everyone, listen to this. We're like, yeah, I know this song, Road to Nowhere, Talking Heads. And then you're like, oh, Talking Heads are amazing. What else is there? And you were the one who bought Graceland. Like,
oh.
We guys bought Paul Simon's Graceland. With you Call Me Al on it. Yeah, I remember that. It had Chevy Chase in it. Awesome.
So that whole like,
that
album is that album was introduced to me by Joe,
insane,
and by by those guys. That family introduced me to that album.
So once we started, the other thing was too. Once we started getting regular work, thanks to Paul Dresden's Employs the Nation policy. Yes, indeed. When we got money, then a lot of our money was spent on, oh, hey, look at this CD I bought. And that's where a lot of that stuff, where you'd be like, oh, I got this, I got Jimi Hendrix album, I got like The Doors, LA Woman, I got, you know, we started going backwards very quickly. Like, oh, I found this album. You know, JC would bring home Fear of the Black Planet, like Public Enemy, and or Paul's Boutique, like the Beastie Boys. And all of a sudden we're like, this is so great. This house is so great for music. And then, oh, what are you going to put on now, Wiggins? Dun, 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 dun. That was a setup. Sorry, Wiggins. What I was actually really going to say was, so he'd have all this old music, and then Wiggins would go, I'm going to put Dean Martin on. You'd be like, Dean Martin?
Fucking Dean Martin. Oh, Dean Martin's pretty
good. Wasn't he in movies with Jerry Lewis?
Oh.
And then it'd be, here we go, put Hey Brother, Pour Us the Wine on
absolutely
again.
That's amazing. That song is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so then it was Dean Martin and
Frank Sinatra.
Just completely opposite worlds of music being played in our house. And then it was Propaganda. Then like you said, it'd be the Porkers. And then you had... Oh, my brother, this is sums up your family, extended family's taste in music. My brother always bought me a joke present every year. So then one year he buys me this CD called Cartoon Ovine Bovine.
Yes.
With all these songs about sheep and cows and, that was basically it. It was sheep in stockings and... You know, I wish I was a cow. All these weird songs, and I go, "Oh, look at this stupid CD my brother got me." And you're like, "Yeah, it's Cartoon."
Yeah.
That might have been one of the nights, the Christmas nights at your house, when Annie and Joe were all there, and I said, "Oh, look at the stupid CD my brother bought me," and everyone was like, "Yeah, it's Cartoon.
Yeah,
put it on, and let's put Mickey the Moth on, or whatever it's called."
I wish I was a cow.
It's just like, oh, yeah. That's right. Sheep been stocky.
Oh, fuck. I have not heard far out. I hadn't thought of that album for so long.
I just found it the other day.
Wow.
Again, and I was like, oh, crazy. So that was the type of family that you had. It was just this...
Eclectic.
Like, oh, I found this really weird... Oh, yeah. We've known about that for years. But have you heard this album?
Shadow on the street now. I hear you push through the rusty gate. Pick up your heels on the concrete. Waiting for a knock coming way too late. It seems an age since I've seen ya. Countdown as the weeks trickle into. So you come in and put your bags down. I know there's something in the air. How can I do this to you right now?
All right, so your next song is I Know It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It.
Yeah.
Now, that's an odd choice. I mean, it's the Rolling Stones,
mm.
but it certainly wouldn't have been a Rolling Stones song I would have expected anyone to choose out of all their songs?
Yeah, out of all their songs. Now, it's... Look, it's probably not... It's definitely not their best song, but it holds a spot in my heart, I suppose, because I was living... It's quite funny. I was living two separate lives at one stage where
okay.
I had my school friends who I would hang out with, and then I had my work friends that I would hang out with.
Is this at the pool?
This was at the pool.
Yeah.
And although we had, you know, I tried to sort of intertwine those two group of friends, it never really works out, you know. It very rarely does. I mean, look, we were very lucky in that some of our friendships, you know, you had made friends with, you know, Craig and Amy, and yeah. that then opened up an enormous friendship group for me and, you know, and everyone else, and we, you know, we all got along quite well. But this was a different sort of vibe, and
yeah, but that was hard. That was easy for you. But difficult. For other people, I'd say the females of that group had difficulty with each other.
Yes.
But I'll tell the story because it sums you up perfectly. And consequently, Craig, our other great friend, perfectly, was when you moved to Newcastle, or maybe even before, you hadn't even moved to Newcastle, we went out to a pub and that was one of those things where like, oh, here's Craig, my really good friend from uni.
Yep.
And here's Wigo. Let's talk about cricket. It's done a lot of work. And so then you kind of hope that you'll be friends. And then the next day I get home from uni and Craig's there at our house. And I go, hey, what are you doing here? And he was like, oh, Wigo rang me and said you want to come over and hang out. So it was like literally the next day.
Yeah.
And he tells the story of where his dad said, oh, Ben's on the phone, and he was like, ugh. Another Ben yep. that he knew he didn't want to talk to. And he was like, Ben who? And he's like, oh, Ben Wiggins. He's like, hey, it's Wicker, all right. So then he was like, hey. Said it was like this new relationship. Like, oh, hi, do you want to come over? Sure. So that was like how you ingratiate yourself very quickly.
Absolutely.
With all my friends.
I'll do that.
So that helps. But it doesn't always work. And maybe that's me. Maybe I'm the opposite. Maybe I'm like, oh, I don't like meeting people.
So we had these two groups. But so I would go out with my work friends. And one of the guys that I would go out with was Terry. So it was Grant, and it was Terry, and it was Tracy, and it was Michelle, and all these friends of mine from a work side. And we'd go out and we'd hang out at the Avoca Beach pub, and then we'd go back to Terry's house. And he would play the Rolling Fucking Stones all night long, as loud as he could, and he, as soon as it hit It's Only Rock and Roll, he would fucking turn it up so loud, and we would all sing along. He'd be up on the lounge, he'd be out the front of the house, he'd be pointing down the street, he would always have a Wild Turkey and Dry in his hand, and a Benson and Hedges special filter in the other,
yeah,
and a bong sitting somewhere close at hand also.
Close at hand, yeah.
So if one of those two things ended up on a table, something else got picked up. But it was always that song, and that was the song. That was sort of like the group song, you know? Like, he was the leader of the group, and everyone...
Was he a bit older than you?
Terry was much older than... He was the father of the group. So we all worked at Gosford Pool. He was working there, and he was the sage advisor to everyone, and, you know...
I love how the sage advisor is the dude doing the Jagger step down the street with a bong close at hand.
Absolutely.
At late hours.
And it was just like that song, yeah, like it meant a lot at that time, and at that time for that group was, you know, having a good time but not taking ourselves too seriously, which a lot of those guys ended up doing. was taking themselves a little bit too seriously. But, but you know, what are you going to do? That time was awesome. It was a great, it was just a great time hanging out. It reminds me of some of the stupid shit that I've done. And the day that I went out drinking with Terry after we'd finished a shift at the pool, just before I was about to start another shift at a new job.
Wow.
And I went drinking with him for 3 hours and then went to work for 9 hours at a new job. First shift. You've never heard this story, have you?
No, I can't quite place where that job would be. Was that at the road pantry? Was that at
the
servo or something?
That was at a video store.
Wow.
So
you used to do it early morning.
Early morning.
Early morning at the pool.
Early morning shift.
And just trying to do the maths.
Yeah, so like I was doing these just before I went to England. I'd do these crazy shifts where I'd work. I'd start at 5:30 at the pool and then finish at 2:30 and then start at 4 o'clock at the video shop and go till 10 or till midnight, depending on what night it was.
Yeah,
and then I'd do that for 4 days straight and then be off for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, jeez.
But before, I don't know, something was happening, and we ended up going to the Leagues Club after work.
Yeah.
And we won on the pokies, and I ended up with like 4 wild turkey and dries in front of me, and he was like, "You're not going until you drink all them." And I'm like, I'm gonna drive. But
yeah.
And then you think of all the stupid things that you've done in your life, and that probably ranks maybe 3rd, I reckon, on the. I reckon there's probably 2 other things that I've done that probably top that, but fuck, it was that was a dumb thing. And that song,
I don't know if this podcast is the place
that's exactly for
those.
Right.
We might get to those off air.
But that song just reminds me of that time and of those people, and especially of that guy, because Terry died, what was it, 12 months ago? And he was a good dude, you know, he was a good dude.
How did he die?
He had a heart attack. Yeah.
And how old is he?
Oh, he would have been...
make us feel old.
Oh, jeez. I don't even know. Like, he would have been mid-60s.
Yeah.
But, look, he lived a good life. He lived a very, very good life. And, you know, he enjoyed every minute that he was alive. Well, he enjoyed every minute that I spent with him anyway.
That you saw him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you catch up with everyone at his funeral?
I did.
Did you catch up with people?
Yeah, I saw pretty much everyone was there. Everyone that we used to hang out with came. It was really nice. To see his kids. Like that was bizarre. It's another story again. But like his kids have grown up and I'm still good friends with his son. And look, they're just that was a really interesting. It's hard once you've moved away from that friendship group. When everyone gets back together again, there's that sort of feeling out period. But then it all just sort of clicks back into line. Everyone's a little bit older and a little bit wiser, and you know everyone can.
Once the stories start getting told,
exactly. Once the stories come out, and you know, and everyone just sort of carries on from where you were, but.
Sorry.
All right. Well, speaking of Lens, we might as well crack on to your last song.
Oh, sweet.
Which is How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. And it's the Michael Bublé edition.
Yeah, the Bublé edition of this particular song. I do like the... it was James Taylor that did it originally, yes. And
I'm going to say he did it before. I don't know if he did the original, but he may have. Marvin Gaye might have done the original.
Okay. I have to listen to that one. The this song was a song that I sang for my wife at our wedding in lieu of writing anything close to a speech.
Was that a conscious choice that you didn't want to write a speech?
I don't ever really think I've written a speech where people have walked away and gone, that was a good speech. So,
okay, at my 21st, you and Richard Ellis made the single greatest 21st speech of all time, where you decided you were going to make a speech, already inebriated, went off together to write a speech, highly intoxicated, and then couldn't read your drunkenly written speech. And so, I don't know, blathered on and...
Oh, I think we said pants a lot and then did a bit of a skit and, you know, I don't know. Oh.
I have vague memories of it anyways. But is that true? You've never made a speech?
Oh,
you're good with words.
But I wasn't. I think I've gotten better. I've gotten better over time, but I don't think... Yeah. I wasn't real confident. Let's just put it that way. But I also, I do enjoy belting out a little bit of a tune on occasion.
Yeah.
And
we have had friends in the past who have suggested you audition for Australian Idol or X Factor or those shows.
Indeed.
That never entered your mind?
It had. That's probably another story for another day. But...
Let me just write that down. I've got a few questions to ask you once we finish recording.
We both love this song, and it was a song that we would, it was one of those things that we'd put on because my wife can sing as well. So we'd have.
Well, your wife's mum, Raina, she sang backup with Johnny O'Keefe.
Absolutely, yes.
Amongst others. So there's a bit of history about it, isn't there?
Absolutely. It was, I was taken aback when I found out that little tidbit of information. But, Lindsay's mum has got an absolutely killer voice. Now she still sings at church and just, goes to town. She sang at the wedding. She actually gets asked pretty much to sing at all the children's weddings and the grandchildren's weddings, and she'll be asked to sing at the great-grandchildren's weddings.
Because they're like a real-life Brady Bunch, aren't they?
Yes.
So Ray and Raina were married before with many children each.
Correct.
Both their partners passed away? Am I wrong?
Ray's first wife, they got divorced.
Oh, okay.
Raina's husband died, and then they got married.
Then they got together, and then how many kids do they have together?
They had two. Lindsay's the youngest.
How many kids all up?
There are, 11 kids and two foster kids.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's a big family to. When you got married, Wiggins, that was the family you were going into.
Yes.
That's a lot of family.
That was a lot of family, and also, quite a daunting, of all the things to do, they wouldn't have known that I was shit at writing speeches, but they know what good singing is, right? So that I have this memory in my mind, right? And I don't know if it's true. I haven't gone back. It's on tape, but I just don't know. But I sang this song, and all my side of the room were up, and they were fucking cheering and going, yeah, that was awesome, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember her side of the family moving. It was just sort of more like crickets.
They were all taking notes.
Yeah, like crickets and...
Missed it. Yeah,
missed poor that. Pitch. Bad. Just bad. A lot of just bad.
Just bad.
I'd look, take $50 out of the card. That was... I shouldn't have to pay for that. The
singing lessons.
Yeah, that's right. But I sang that song. Geez. And so it has held a very special place in my heart. Before
it was a lovely day, Wigan. So it's a lovely day. Your wedding, delightful.
It was. It was fun times, and I still think back on that, and very enjoyable. And I did get to see a lot of the people that I wanted to see on that day. Like a lot of people say, on your wedding day, you don't get to. You know, it goes too quickly and you don't get to spend enough time with these people or with those people. And it's just like, fuck it, I just went out and spent 2 hours out on the balcony with the people that I wanted to hang out
exactly.
with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it depends how you want to be used, I guess. Mm. That's the right term for it. Or you could just be like Justine and I and have a wedding that goes for friggin' 12 hours or whatever. You'll get enough time with people.
Exactly. I think I've become a serial change-up artist during weddings. I think at pretty much every wedding that I've been to, except for my own, I've taken a change of clothes. And as soon as it's like, is it safe to get out of your suit? Bang, I'm gone. And I'm in shorts and a T-shirt walking around.
Yeah. Very wise.
Absolutely.
At our wedding, I was very jealous when you got changed. I was like, that's what I want to do. Am I going to put my feet in the pool? No.
Oh, see, the speech I gave at your wedding, idiotic. I was really happy with it at the time, and then I thought back and went, oh, that was just bad.
it was a poem, wasn't it? Didn't you write a poem? I remember a poem.
It was a poem in the style of Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. I just remember we drank Moscow Mules at the end of it. That's all I remember.
That was good.
That's fine by me.
Very good. But yeah, look, again, we've gotten off track. I don't really know what else I can say about that song. It's just always it's always going to be there because it was part of a very special day in my life.
And it's Bublé. And it's you and Lynn's a big Bublé fan.
Oh, of course. We went to when Lindsay was pregnant with Louis, who is my youngest.
Yeah.
For all those out there in listening land.
If they're still listening.
If they are still listening. Hopefully you've edited this really well. So it's a
4-minute podcast.
We got tickets to go and see Mr. Bublé two nights in a row. Second night being Valentine's Day. So we were front row both nights, closer to the centre of the stage on the second night. Now,
wowzers.
Unlike Tony Bennett, who does his entire set exactly the same every night, even his asides to the crowd are all scripted and exactly the same. Bublé changed his up a little bit on the second night, but he had this little repartee with one of the people in the audience. I was that person. So he made a little joke, and then he pointed at me and he said, but I would, I'd switch my sexual preference for you, sir. And I got up and I was up on the big screen, and it just so happened were probably I think there were four people that we knew in the audience that I didn't know were there that later rang me or texted me and said, you're on the big screen at fucking Bublé, was it you? And and it was me.
Bublé's gone gay for Wigan's.
Absolutely. That was the shirt they were selling after the show. But during that, so we're all up having a dance, and I signed to him to throw me a towel, right? And so he nodded, and then he threw the towel. And I jumped up and grabbed it, and being 6'5", it was, basically it was my hand above all these screaming women.
Yeah.
And I pulled it down and I handed it to my wife, and this bitch came from around the back and just looked at me and went, you're not going to keep that, are you? And I just went, well, yeah, it's actually a present for my wife on Valentine's Day, a sweaty Michael Bublé towel, and she's going to keep it. But she was, oh, I could just feel the eyes in the back of my head boring into me. The hatred was just overwhelming.
6'5".
6'5". Whole lot of
love. Block. By Detlef.
Play for the Golden State Warriors.
The block.
The shelter of someone's arms, and there you were. Needed someone to understand my ups and downs, and there you were. With sweet love and devotion, touching my emotion. I wanna stop and thank you, baby. I just wanna stop and thank you, baby. Oh, oh yeah, sweet it is to be loved by you. How sweet it is to be loved by you. I close my eyes at night, wondering where would I be without you in my life. Everything I did was such a bore. Everywhere I went, you know, I've been there before. But you brighten up for me all of my days. With a love so sweet in so many ways, I wanna stop and thank you, baby. I just wanna stop and thank you, baby. Oh, oh, sweet.
And then to finish it off, we've been to see Bublé, sitting in the front row, get up on the big screen. We were staying in Sydney that night on George Street. We've gotten the train back in, walking down George Street with this, and a bus pulls up in front of us, a minibus. So we're out at Homebush. We've come all the way back into Sydney.
Yeah.
This minibus pulls up to the lights right in front of me. This dude sticks his head out and goes, "You're the guy from the big screen that Bublé wants to fuck." And that just made my night. So that's my Michael Bublé story.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Wiggins. Why not finish on that? Thank you again for your second appearance.
That's a pleasure.
And I've got a few questions to ask.
Thank you, Matthew. Anytime.